I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Professor Aaron Tapper, founding director of the SWIG program in Jewish Studies and Social Justice at the University of San Francisco, author, Judaism's A 21st Century Introduction to Jews and Jewish Identities. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our two Jewish Maven on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. We are now approaching the season of Passover, Pesach, with the beginning of the Hebrew month of Nisan this Tuesday. The start of this springtime month in the Jewish calendar begins a period when we explore the concept of freedom, its extraordinary importance and meaning. For Jews, freedom is intimately tied up with the story of the Exodus, the need to leave a place of constriction and servitude, of slavery and abuse, to achieve freedom and covenant. In the Passover Seder, the first two nights of Pesach are coming up April 10th and 11th, the main thematic statement is, in every generation, each of us must see ourselves as though we personally came out of Egypt. Behold, or vador chayav adam lirot et atzmo ke'ilu hu yatsa mimitzrayim. The very name of Egypt in Hebrew, Mitzrayim, has within it the word tsar, meaning a narrow place. Although geographically fairly large, virtually the only part of Egypt that's fertile enough to live in is the narrow belt of irrigated land on either side of the long Nile River, which opens up near its mouth to form the wider Nile Delta into the Mediterranean Sea. That image of the Israelite slaves emerging from the narrow nation of Egypt, this place of captivity, into an open life of freedom, is a vivid concept implicit in the Torah's narrative of liberation. Perhaps because our birth as a people took place through this process of leaving Egypt, there's something powerful and intrinsic in the Jewish response to immigration, even today. It's a kind of internalized understanding of how the original Exodus and all of our subsequent enforced wanderings entered into our souls. It's why we formerly wandering Jews understand the challenge and desperation of the refugee and the immigrant, and respond with compassion and empathy to those who are forced from their homes into a new and dangerous life. It's also why we see the advantage of needing to leave our present condition and move on to new opportunities and possibilities. Israeli poet Amnon Rybak said it beautifully in his poem Kol Adam Tzarich Mitzrayim, Everyone Needs Egypt. Everyone needs his own personal Egypt to be Moses himself in the midst of it with a strong hand or gritted teeth. Everyone needs terror and great darkness and comfort and security and salvation to know how to lift his eyes to heaven. Everyone needs one prayer that will always be on his lips. A man needs to surrender once. Everyone needs a shoulder. Everyone needs his own personal Egypt to redeem himself from the house of bondage, to leave at midnight into the wilderness of fears, to stride straight into the midst of the waters, to see them open before him on both sides. Everyone needs a shoulder to lift up the bones of Joseph. Everyone needs to straighten up. Everyone needs his own personal Egypt and Jerusalem and one long journey to remember forever in his feet. That was Amnon Rybak's great poem, Everyone Needs Egypt. You see, immigration is in our blood, in our hearts, and yes, in our feet. It's why we're not likely as Jews to respond positively to the condemnation of all immigrants, or to harsh criticism or demonization of those who seek survival by moving and search for a better life. We know that experience deeply, and we Jews have always known it for well over 3,000 years. You know, in recent years, Israel, a nation made up of Jewish immigrants from literally 150 different countries or more, has struggled with a different kind of problem. While Israel has an incredible history of accepting and absorbing Jewish immigrants and refugees far out of proportion to its small size and resources, a new kind of immigrant has challenged the generosity and ability of Israelis and the Israeli government to welcome the stranger, which the Torah commands repeatedly. Non-Jewish economic and political refugees from sub-Saharan Africa, including Sudan, Eritrea, and Ethiopia, have crossed the Sinai from Egypt and come into Israel seeking a better life. There is no easy solution to this near crisis, and Israel certainly hasn't found one yet. Alma Zohar wrote a lovely song about the refugee problem in Israel, reflecting on the relationship between the Israelites coming out of Egypt to freedom and the Africans who flee tyranny and war, seeking freedom in Israel, but not finding it. As our guest last week, Susan Silverman, Rabbi Susan Silverman, noted, as Alma Zohar sings, there is always war in Africa. With luck, it's so far away we don't see it or hear it. Out of Egypt to Jerusalem, they come without water. In every generation, each of us is obligated to see ourselves as though we had come out of slavery in Egypt. Alma Zohar's song, Out of Egypt.
תמיד יש מלחמה באפריקה, מזל שהיא רחוקה, שלא רואים ולא שומעים אותה מכאן. גם אני הלכתי פעם בנתיב האיסורים, ממצרים לירושלים, במדבר ימים רבים בלי מים, בלי מים, עם אותה שאלה בעיניים. גם אני פגשתי רשע, המכה בלי הבחנה, אנשים חפים מפשע, אנשים בלי הגנה, בלי בית, בלי בית, עם ילדים קטנים בידיים, והם דופקים לך בדלת, הם בוכים בכי תמרורים, אל תאמר מה לי אם אלה, אלה אנשים זרים. הדור חייב אדם לראות עצמו כאילו הוא יצא ממצרים, שלא ישכח איך ברח חוקה הושפל נרצח, איך צעק לשמיים. שלא היה לאן לברוח, דמי היה מותר. אות קין, אות קין, אנשים נופלים לברכיים, והם דופקים לך בדלת, הם בוכים בכי תמרורים, אל תאמר.
That was Alma Zohar's powerful song, Out of Egypt, for the coming season of Passover. The lyrics include, I too once walked down long paths of pain across an endless desert without water, lacking all protection without a home, carrying small children of foreign people, foreigners, strangers. It's a reminder of our powerful Jewish requirement to remember that we too were all once refugees, that our survival as a people was dependent on our ability to find new homes in new countries filled with strangers. And this coming Passover season should renew our ability to identify with the refugees who, like us, struggle today to find safety and security in a dangerous and often hostile world. Our guest this morning, Professor Aaron Tapper, has written a new introductory book about Judaism that has the capacity to change the way we think about ourselves. It's called Judaisms, a 21st Century Introduction to Jews and Jewish Identities, and that plural alone is startling. Find out why it's there and how Professor Aaron Tapper's understanding of Jewish identity is refreshing and new when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Hi, my name is Lauriella, and I'd like to tell you how you can help send children like me to a Jewish day school at no cost to you. Arizona allows its taxpayers to receive a tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations such as JETCO. JETCO is the only tuition organization solely dedicated to Jewish education in Tucson. JETCO provides scholarships to children who attend qualified private schools like Congregation Anshai Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, which educates students from grades K through 8th. You may give up to $1,087 for single tax filers and $2,173 for married couples who file jointly. Jewish education nurtures Jewish identity for generations of students like me, so please go online and visit our website at www.jetco.org or give JETCO a call at 647-8442. Again, that's 647-8442. And tell them Lauriella sent you.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Professor Aaron Hahn Tapper is the May and Benjamin Swig Associate Professor in Jewish Studies and the founding director of the Swig Program in Jewish Studies and Social Justice at the University of San Francisco. His new book, published just a little less than a year ago, Judaisms, a 21st Century Introduction to Jews and Jewish Identities, has become really a textbook on Judaism around the country, maybe around the world. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Thank you for having me.
Delighted. So, unlike every other textbook ever published about Judaism, it starts with a plural. Can you explain that?
Sure. I mean, on one sense, it's a gimmick insofar as getting people's attention, like this is something different, and it's subtle.
It clearly works.
It's subtle, but, and, you know, by virtue of just adding an S, but at the same time, it's disruptive to people, and hopefully in a constructive way. The main thrust of the book is arguing that from the beginning of this community that we now call Jews, tracing it all the way back to its origins, this community has always been incredibly heterogeneous. The diversity is arguably one of the... It's one of the most diverse communities in the world, especially when considering that there's only 15 million or so Jews on the planet. So it's really trying to underscore from the get-go how diverse and multi-perspectival and multi-form and non-homogeneous Jews are and have always been.
You know, I tend to think about this as kind of the golden age of American Judaism. Would you agree with that assessment?
It depends what you mean exactly.
Well, we have a large, affluent, accepted Jewish community. While there's still our bursts of anti-Semitic stuff, most of us are in no way physically endangered, unlike so many times in Jewish history. And Jews have achieved at an incredible level across American society, and the American Jewish community has lots of kind of tremendous accomplishments and institutions. Whether that means we're growing or developing in the future is another matter, but I don't think this has happened terribly often in Jewish history.
Yeah, we're definitely at an anomalous time. You know, for starters, and you and I probably take this for granted, but 80% of all Jews live in two countries alone, 40% in America and 40% in the State of Israel. And historically, that's completely out of the norm. It's an outlier. Obviously, the State of Israel didn't exist as such 100 years ago, and 100 plus years ago was when you had the rush of roughly a million Jews between 1880 and 1910 immigrating to the United States of America. So if there's roughly 200 countries on the planet Earth, and Jews still reside in somewhere between 140, 150 of those countries, the dispersal of the Jews is still incredibly widespread. But at the same time, the fact that 8 out of 10 Jews live in just two countries is strange when mapped out. Now, in terms of stability or the golden age or what have you, I don't know. I'm sure you and I could have a very long talk about that. But at a minimum, yes. In terms of safety, I would agree with that, despite, you know, shifts in discourse in the United States of America, significant shifts in the last 4 months. But yes, I'd say the Jews have been able to thrive in the United States and the State of Israel in ways that they haven't been able to historically, for sure.
We will talk much more with Professor Aaron Hontapper and explore how Jewish identity is formed and how he reflects that in his book, Judaism's 21st Century Introduction to Jews and Jewish Identities, when we come back in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
If you or a loved one is dealing with a cancer diagnosis, managing the healthcare maze might be one of the hardest things you ever do. We're Advocation Services, private patient advocates serving Tucsonians living with cancer. We focus on helping you while you focus on getting better. Visit us at advocationservices.com or call us at 616-0005.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kfel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com, TOO Jewish Radio 18@gmail. Or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We are now pleased and serene to bring you an occasional feature of Two Jewish Kohans, or Koans, from our Zen Judaism department. Be patient and achieve all things. Be impatient and achieve all things faster. And we are taught that one should practice loving kindness to all sentient beings. Still, would it kill you to find a nice sentient being who happens to be Jewish? That was our Zen Judaism segment, Two Kohans, or Koans for Jews. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about the Jewish communities in what's sometimes called East Central Europe. I'm not sure what that means, but I do know what the places are. Prague is a fascinating Jewish community with a great deal of history, a great deal of tragedy, and some vitality today. Let's talk about it.
Right, so Prague, Budapest, and Vienna are often referred to as the jewels in the crown of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And people often, and I think wisely, visit the three cities on the same trip. They're pretty close together. They were culturally linked in many ways, although the vernacular language in each capital is different.
Right?
Prague was always the westernmost capital of the Slavic world and of the communist world. And geographically, Prague's in Western Europe. Culturally, because it was ruled from Moscow, it seems like Eastern Europe, and there's still some remnants of that where people use an abacus instead of a modern calculator or whatever. But geographically, certainly, it's far west of Vienna or Budapest. And yet Vienna was never considered Eastern Europe. It's one of the peculiarities in how we perceive the world is that. It's also the case that there was never really such a thing as Czech Jewry. I mean, there were Bohemian Jews and Moravian Jews, and a lot of the Jews who lived in Prague spoke German rather than Czech and saw themselves as living in the Bohemian province of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and Kafka wrote in German. I mean, these consider, and that's a very interesting case, because depending on who you ask, Kafka is a German author, a Czech author, or a German author.
Or a Jewish author.
Right.
That, we like to claim him.
Right. So, I mean, it's this is true for almost everything in Prague. You have this multiple layers of identity, Jewish, Czech, Czechoslovak, German, Bohemian. It's a real puzzle, and I think they're still, particularly the older people, are puzzling through it. Younger people care less about the labels and feel more connected to international whatever they do, whether it's music or computers or drugs or left-wing politics or right-wing politics, whatever. They feel more like they grew up in the EU, for one thing. They feel like Europeans. They don't remember the days when they were forced to speak Russian and there were Soviet troops marching through their streets, and when there was a highly artificial exchange rate. I mean, that's so much in the distant past for them that most people under 30 or 40 have no memory of that. It's like a new country, but a very ancient city. And there are buildings, I mean, as you know, that big castle that overlooks Prague,
it's Prague,
the oldest castle in continuous use in Europe. It's been in use since the 900s. So it's amazing to walk through that building. It's still the seat of government.
And I was there in winter. I don't think they've heated it since the 900s.
Correct.
I want to add that.
Cold and damp.
Cold and damp. And that's where they threw the guys out the window in those defenestrations years ago. The Jewish.
That was in the foreign ministry, by the way. The most famous defenestration took place from the foreign ministry, which is where we held that meeting every year.
Wow. So you had that sense
I've been at that window.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's that's a long way down.
Yeah.
The, I just want to add one note. I mean, the Jewish community of Prague, all of the synagogues that had made it past into modernity, including the Altnoy Shulman, really remarkable synagogues, were preserved by the Germans because it was going to be a museum of extinct peoples.
Right.
The great part is some of them are now used actively as synagogues.
Right.
Altnoy Shul among them, the Spanish synagogue is used by the Reform congregation, the conservative use it another. It's a really interesting, not a large Jewish community, but a very interesting one today.
And a very diverse one.
Very diverse. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Mivina in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
There is a wonderful twinning program that we have between Temple Emanuel's religious school and a variety of other religious schools and the our partnership region in the south of Israel. Tell us a little bit about how those work, because I don't think most of our listeners understand what that could look like.
Good. Good that you're bringing it up, because the Israel Center have very simple goal and role, like really short. It's to create as many living bridges between Tucson and Israel, because I have my Israel and you have your own Israel. It doesn't need to be everyone's else Israel. So one of the ways that we could, like one of the bridges that we created is the school twinning program. And we have 14 connections with 651 kids from both from Tucson and from Kiryat Malachi and Chof Ashkelon, this enormous number of kids. You know, it's the number of the living bridges. And the idea is that every, let's focus on Temple. Like we have Bri and Dori and Libby, of course, that connect directly with the teachers. We are making this connection.
Teacher-to-teacher connection.
First of all, because that makes the difference. If the teachers are all in, understand what it brings to the class, understand what the kids can take it, understand that it will influence the Jewish identity and Israel within this Jewish identity, they are all in, they understand it, they try to just add it to enrich the program. They are not creating more and more curriculum, they're just adding a component, which that's beautiful because it's natural part of what they're doing. It's not like, oh, let's think of an extra curriculum, which is extra work, we don't need it. So this year at Temple Emanuel, we have 5th, 6th, and 7th grade that are connecting with Harel School in Israel. And we are lucky enough to host one of the teachers at Temple Emanuel. Her name is Bertie Jano. And since then, we are exchanging gifts and letters. And Temple Emanuel was so gorgeous amazing, to have shul in one of the nights in order to be...
Kind of like you're staying together almost.
Yeah, but to do it like, so the Israelis will come at 8 a.m. and not all the time Israelis are coming because of the time difference. Israelis right. always came, you know, after school and stayed in order to have. This time, Temple Emmanuel offered to shul in. So right. they host all the kids for the whole night. Thank you for
Everybody
that.
Everybody stays overnight.
Yeah, I ran away.
I'm not going to sleep overnight.
and
but thank
really
God we have members of Temple
and
who are going
have,
to.
Like, they have their Hanukkah celebration in the middle of the night,
right?
Really, and it was amazing. Although they were all interested of doing this dub. I don't know if you know what it
yes.
was. It was lovely to watch the connection. And since then, they exchange emails. They send bracelet, friendship bracelet. The Temple Emmanuel kids created with the names of the kids in Israel with our shinshinim, and they are planning more and more beautiful, meaningful
exchanges,
and just to get to know each other. And I'm sure some of the kids, and one of the kids actually going in June. Nora Quinn is going, and she will be hosted by one of the family that participate in the program.
I know, isn't it fantastic? And you know, these family to family connections, it just makes Israel more
real
for people here, and they can see what a beautiful experience it is and what a beautiful country it is. Thanks so much, Ashrad. We'll talk next
Toda
week.
Rabbi.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Boker Tov. Good morning.
Parenting is different now. I know people have been parents since the dawn of time.
Right.
But it seems to me that parenting a kid in 2017 is not the same experience that it was in the 1980s
For sure.
Or 70s or 60s or 50s.
Yeah. You know, I was a child of the 70s and can remember, you know, we look back and just with a disbelief that, you know, parents were smokers and rode around in the front seat of my mom's big green station wagon with no seatbelt, on and on, and played in the Rieta Wash during monsoon season.
Right, right. You know.
But it is different today, and it's hard. Parenting is tough work. There are all kinds of phenomenal, you know, manuals and guides and books and spiritual leaders and organizations and classes. But at the end of the day, you have a relationship with your child, and relationships are difficult and they're very rewarding, but they have challenges too.
And they change as kids grow and mature and you change.
Absolutely. And I think the pressures on people today, are different, and some of them are a little more insidious. Especially when we think about technology. And you know, I was at a conference, National Jewish Day School conference recently, and they, one of the keynotes showed us current brain research on the brain at play, and playing specifically with video games or games you might see on your cell phone, like Candy Crush or Pokemon Go, and how there's a real kind of addiction psychology that happens because you get these little bit of measurable rewards. And so when that text message pops up, or when your Instagram, you know, gets a like or whatever, you're getting some kind of dopamine effect in the brain. And I think it has a huge impact on society and certainly on the dynamic of parents and kids.
You know, it used to be that when you took a car trip with your kids, you had to think of ways to entertain them and interactive games. Now you're lucky if you can get a response because they've got their phones out, the headphones go on, and they're in another world.
Yeah, and you know, it's got its benefits and it's got its drawbacks. And so it's one more challenge for parents to be, you know, kind of fighting the world and setting appropriate boundaries for their kids and supporting their kids in growing up. Kids need time, they need space, they need air, they need healthy activities, they need engagement, they need our support. My heart goes out to all you parents out there. Thank you for what you do. And we are your partners. That's another thing to remember, too, is that you're not alone. Parents aren't alone in raising kids. Schools are here to help. And hopefully, you know, parents engage with schools in a productive, healthy, problem-solving kind of way so that we work together to raise wonderful human beings.
Absolutely. And I have to say that it turns out there are certain things in life that are actually more important than Wi-Fi.
Not much, but yeah.
Thanks, John. We'll
Thank
talk
you.
Next week.
Have a great day.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term, inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Mr. and Mrs. Goldberg have just gotten married. As they head for their honeymoon, Goldberg says to his new wife, "Would you have married me if my father hadn't left me a fortune?" And she replied, "Darling, I would have married you no matter who had left you a fortune." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we begin the middle book of the Torah, Leviticus. The Hebrew name for this book comes from its first word, Vayikra, God called. It is a book filled with ritual observances and rites designed to create and nurture sanctity, but it begins in an interesting way. There's a famous idiosyncrasy about the Aleph, the last Hebrew letter in the first word of the book, Vayikra, as it's written in the Torah. It's written much smaller than the other letters. Aleph, the Midrash tells us, is the first letter of the word Ani, I. Therefore, if we wish God to call us directly, we must diminish our focus on I and seek to limit our egotism. If we can do that, then we, like Moses, will be able to clearly hear God's call to respond, and so find the holiness that makes up the central subject of the book of Leviticus. Less of the I, and so more of God. Only when we diminish the centrality of our self-absorption can we allow God in. Leviticus focuses on the way our ancestors worshiped God through animal sacrifices, korbanot. For the past 1,900 years since the destruction of the Second Temple in Jerusalem, prayer, study, and acts of charity and repentance have replaced sacrifice. These are all ways to open ourselves to God and diminish our emphasis on the self. The great English author D.H. Lawrence, better known as a racy novelist, wrote a fascinating poem on the subject of sacrifice. The old idea of sacrifice was this, he wrote, "The blood of the lower life must be shed for the feeding and strengthening of the handsome, fuller life." Oh, when the old world sacrificed a ram, it was to the gods who make us splendid, and it was for a feast of meat for men and maids, on a day of splendor for the further splendor of men. It was the eating up of little lives, even doves, even small birds, into the dance and splendor of a bigger life. There is no such thing as sin. There is only life and anti-life. And sacrifice is the law which enacts that little lives must be eaten up into the dance and splendor of bigger lives with due reverence and acknowledgement. Lawrence's poem is powerful, but it states the opposite of the Jewish view and understanding of sacrifice, for sacrifice in the Torah was a way to accept not that smaller lives were given over for the sake of our more important lives. Instead, it was a method to connect us to the fact that our own existence is holy only when we offer ourselves to God. by giving up something, a bit of our possessions, a bit of our self-importance, do we give our lives meaning and sanctity? May we remember this central lesson this week and every week. When we return on To Jewish, our guest Professor Aaron Tapper will explain how Jewish identity has changed and continues to evolve, and what his new book, Judaism's A 21st Century Introduction to Jews and Jewish Identities, can teach us about that. Find out when we come back in a moment here on To Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you or a loved one is dealing with a cancer diagnosis, managing the healthcare maze might be one of the hardest things you ever do. We're Advocation Services, private patient advocates, serving Tucsonans living with cancer. We focus on helping you while you focus on getting better. Visit us at advocationservices.com or call us at 616-0005.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
An 18-year-old Jewish man with both American and Israeli citizenship is suspected of being behind the many fake bomb threats directed at Jewish community centers and other Jewish institutions worldwide. The cyber attack unit of the Israel Fraud Squad arrested the suspect late last week based on information it got from the FBI and other law enforcement authorities. Police seized computers and other items that allowed him to perpetrate the threats while hiding his identity. The suspect, Jewish, has lived in Israel for years. The Israeli army refused to draft him on personal grounds, finding him unfit for service. His motives are currently unknown. The police also detained his father for questioning. The first incident associated with the youth was a bomb threat at a Jewish institution in New Zealand that was received in 2016. Police in New Zealand identified the IP address as coming from Israel. Similar incident occurred in Australia. Israel was also identified as the source. Israeli police initially struggled to locate the suspect, but then received several reports of threats from 16 Jewish centers in 9 U.S. states. Florida, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, Tennessee, Georgia, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, and North Carolina. The FBI investigated. Delta Airlines also received a threat about a bomb on one of its planes, causing it to halt flights to check their aircraft, forcing a plane already in the air to land. The FBI handed over the information to the Israeli police after finding these threats came from Israel, too. Using innovative technologies, the police were able finally to locate the youth's home. He is in custody now and will remain so. Last month, a former reporter, Juan Thompson, was arrested for making bomb threats against at least 8 Jewish centers, allegedly as part of an ongoing attempt to shame his former girlfriend. Well, we can hope that this new arrest in Israel closes this sad chapter. Prague's medieval Altnoy Synagogue, the old new synagogue of the marvelous Jewish quarter in Prague, capital of the Czech Republic, received 2 new Torah scrolls last week, first one since the Nazi Holocaust in World War II shattered the country's once thriving Jewish community. The 2 Torahs, funded by donations to the Prague Jewish community, were written in Israel and brought into the synagogue in a siyum ceremony that included scribing the final letters of the Torah scrolls by guests and members of the community, and then a big street dance to celebrate. After years when Torahs were being destroyed, burnt, the community today celebrates with its rabbi a new Torah scroll after many, many years. That is the best expression of the development of the Prague Jewish community, said the deputy head of the Jewish community there, František Banyai. The Altnoy Synagogue is over 700 years old, one of the oldest existing synagogues in Europe and the largest standing medieval synagogue in Europe. Apart from its significance to the community, it is one of the main attractions of Prague's extraordinary Jewish town, a popular destination for visitors. I was there about 2 months ago. Before World War II, there were 125,000 Jews living in what is now the Czech Republic. More than 80,000 were murdered by the Nazis during World War II. The Czech Federation of Jewish Communities estimates that there are 15,000 to 20,000 Jews living in the Czech Republic now, but only a quarter are registered with Jewish communities. Arya Nussbaum Cohen, a 23-year-old Jewish singer, won a prominent competition held by the Metropolitan Opera. A countertenor from Brooklyn, the highest male voice of all, he was one of six winners among the nine finalists who performed at the National Council Auditions Grand Finals at Lincoln Center last week. That prize is the most prestigious for young opera singers in the U.S. Nussbaum Cohen performed two arias, one from Handel and one from Jonathan Dove. The New York Times classical music editor Zachary Wolf said Nussbaum Cohen, who studied history at Princeton University, was the only complete artist in the competition, expressive yet dignified, his phrasing confident, his ornamentation stylishly discreet. He brought tears to my eyes, Wolf wrote of Nussbaum Cohen's rendition of the Handel aria. The National Council auditions are run by the Metropolitan Opera to discover promising young opera singers and assist in the development of their careers. Auditions were held across the U.S. and Canada, and winners received $15,000. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Professor Aaron Hahn Tapper is the author of the book Judaism's A 21st Century Introduction to Jews and Jewish Identities, published by University of California Press. He is the founding director of the SWIG Program in Jewish Studies and Social Justice, University of San Francisco, the May and Benjamin SWIG Associate Professor in Jewish Studies there as well. He got his PhD at a place close to my heart, University of California, Santa Barbara, where I was a cantor for 5 years a long time ago. You couldn't find a nicer place to go to graduate school?
Yes. Seriously. Wow.
I want to talk about the way you, in your book, explore Jewish identity formation or identity formation. It's there's been changes in the way we think about that. Can you explain a little bit about how you organized your book and how you think about that?
To some degree, the book emerged out of my teaching a course on at school. We call it Jews, Judaisms, and Jewish Identities. But for all intents and purposes, it's an intro to Judaism course. And teaching it over a course of a number of years, studying 2007, it quickly became apparent to me that the framing of Jews and the framing of Judaisms that I was trying to lay out for my students, most of whom are not Jewish, wasn't hitting them where they were at. Meaning, for 21st century university students at a minimum, you know, those on and off university campuses, approaching the notion of being a Jew or identifying as with Judaism, it's a social identity. You know, identity is something we connect with. It gives us purpose. We perform it through everyday actions, through sacred rituals, through mundane rituals. And it's always changing. It's never concrete or static. So the approach is really rooted in some sense in social psychology and sociology, which is largely my training to some degree at UCSB is in the sociology of religion or the history of the study of religions. But because the entry point for Jews, especially Jews under the age of 40, to being Jewish is through as the past as a culture or ethnicity or a nation or a nationality or a race or a religion, that there's so many different ways into the conversation that the kind of old school, for me, old school perspective of Judaism as a religion just doesn't do it and doesn't speak to younger people. I mean, it also doesn't speak to me, but you know, I've spent lots and lots of times in libraries and studying with teachers, so it's I'm not necessarily the norm there. So it's an attempt to lay out how, you know, at the same time it's showing, hey, look, this is a unique community. At the same time, my goal in the book is also to de-exceptionalize the Jewish people insofar as it's another group of people that perform their identity. And they have a dominant narrative, and they have subordinated narratives, and collective stories, and marginalized stories. And in that sense, it's no different than any other group. And that's something that speaks to people. You know, you clearly don't have to be Jewish to get that.
In the 21st century, we're seeing a number of people connected to the Jewish community who aren't Jewish. Is this a new phenomenon?
I can't speak to the statistics about that because that's not my forte. But I would say no, yes and no. I mean, there's a freedom certainly in 21st century America. There's a permeability to identities where people can cross into them more easily. The notion of being a border crosser, right? The root of the word ivri. Hebrew is historically very applicable to Jews, but in this point in time in the United States, among other places, it's not that unique. There's shifts taking place, for some happening much too quick, for others, especially in San Francisco, compared to the rest of the country, not nearly quick enough, but there's a certain deconstruction of identities that's still taking place, you know, started decades ago, and is creating a space for permeability and border crossing of social identity categories. So this also not only applies in terms of sexual orientation and sex and gender and race, also applies broadly, but also applies to the Jewish community specifically. Obviously, you'll have denominational movements who will weigh in on this in very strict ways or very liberal ways. But so on the one hand, I'd say yes, it's unique. This phenomenon that you mentioned is unique because in many historical instances, you didn't have that ability, not just towards the Jewish community or Jews becoming whatever the non-Jewish group is, but there was more rigidity in terms of crossing any social identity category. So it's unique today, but not necessarily just to the Jewish community. It's a much larger phenomenon in the United States.
The formation of identity, which we took for granted, I think, within the Jewish community, for a long time. It's not that we didn't have religious schools, cheders, different ways of, you know, going to JCCs, doing things that were supposed to create Jewish identity, but it was kind of assumed that people who were Jewish would grow up to be Jewish. That's not a good assumption anymore, is it?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And some of that does have to do with the permeability of identity. I'd say any shift in Jewish discourse is always, every phenomenon that I've looked at is always in relationship to the larger non-Jewish milieu. Putting the State of Israel aside, where it's a Jewish-majority country, and that's also an anomaly, when you look at any of these major shifts of, you know, women in the rabbinate, or openly queer, gay, lesbian, transgender individuals, in positions of greater authority in the Jewish community. Despite the fact that these things are still happening relatively slowly, especially the latter, they've always been happening in America. They've always been happening part and parcel to larger trends in the 98% of the country that's not Jewish. So you know, if we go back to the 2013 Pew study, probably the most prominent one of the last 5 years, on Jewish Americans, and you look at the percentage of Jews under the age of 40 who do not identify with any religion, but they still identify as Jewish. For them, it would perhaps fall under culture or ethnicity or heritage or ancestry. The so-called nones, N-O-N-E, who have no religion, well, that's a phenomenon taking place across the country. A scholar friend of mine at USF is even going to be working on this in regard to the Muslim American community, which is much more recent in terms of statistical immigration status coming to the United States over the last 30, 40 years, meaning the phenomenon of nones, of Jews who do not identify with any religion.
Yeah, we have to be clear, it's nones, N-O-N-E-S, not N-U-N-S, which would confuse everyone. Yeah,
N-O-N-E-S, nones meaning have no religion.
Right.
That's not, the Jewish Americans who answered in that way, that statistically they're representing the Americans at large who answered in that way. So, getting back to your question of Jews choosing not to be Jewish, well, there's I think we're in a different era of the even question, where you have, it depends how we're even categorizing what it means to be Jewish. Like, someone could say, yeah, I don't have any religion. And then, do you identify with an ethnicity or a culture? And the person could say, yeah, I'm Jewish. So that's not strange anymore, statistically speaking, for Jews under 40, Jewish Americans, to say that. So even choosing not to be Jewish, we would even need to unpack what does that mean, because the very categories of what it means to be X are changing before our eyes. And one of the ways that we're defining who is Jewish and who isn't necessarily keeping up with the facts on the ground, meaning if you and I did a study to count how many Jews there were in the country, well, it depends on how we're defining what a Jew is. Are we letting self-identification, or are we saying you're only Jewish if one of your parents is Jewish? Or so even the discourse itself is founded on a given definition of what it means to be Jewish.
I want to thank Professor Aaron Hahn-Tapper for a great visit here on Too Jewish. His book is called Judaisms, a 21st Century Introduction to Jews and Jewish Identities. I have to ask you this. Do you ever get confused with your brother?
Depends, sometimes. usually not. I got a few inches on him, and despite my gray hair and gray-ish beard, I'm the little brother. But in general, people can tell us apart.
I think Jake has other qualities. Thanks again, and people can find out more from your book, and where else can they go to find out more about your work?
The best place to find out about the book is UC Press's website, and you can just go to UC Press, as in University of California Press, .edu, and type in Judaisms. I don't have my own website or anything like that, but at the moment, Judaisms is the most reflective of what I've been working on these days.
Aaron, thanks so much.
Thank you. It was really a pleasure.
My pleasure. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest will be Professor Eric Klein, director of the Capital Archaeological Institute at George Washington University, author of Three Stones Make a Wall, The Story of Archaeology in 1177 BC, the year civilization collapsed. And listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Top 10 Jewish podcasts in America, according to Moment Magazine. Our play out this morning on Too Jewish for the new month of Nisan this week, the month of Passover, comes from the a cappella group Jewish Treats, their parody song, The Best Seder in the USA, a takeoff on Miley Cyrus' Party in the USA. Well, that's kind of what a Seder is, only with meaning. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Woke up in bed at the corner of Lex with a dream of how it used to be. Remembering the time of the Exodus and how the Jews were set free. Jumped in the cab, throwing a Seder for the first time. Look to the right and I see the Manischewitz sign. I'm hosting my first Seder, so please don't be a hater. My tummy's turning, hope my Seder is amazing. So much pressure that I'm schwitzing. That's when the matzah man turned on the radio.
The Dayenu song was on.
And the Dayenu song was on. And the Dayenu song was on. So I put my yarmulke on, they're playing my song. And the butterflies fly away. Cleaning it up like, yeah. Grinding it up like, yeah. Fill the wine up in Elijah's cup. I know it's gonna be okay. Yeah, the best Seder in the USA. Yeah, the best Seder in the USA. Get to my house in the taxi cab.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.